Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 8th of April. Our guest this hour is the author of One Nation Underdog, Adventures in the New World of Prozac Popping Puppies, Dog Park Politics, and Organic Pet Food. Michael Schaefer is our guest. He lives in Philadelphia with his wife, Kelty, their daughter, Ellie, and Murphy. That's my dog's name, too. The St. Bernard, my dog is a Wheaton Terrier, and Amelia, the black cat. Michael has worked as a writer and editor at Washington City Paper, a reporter at U.S. News and World Report, and the Philadelphia Inquirer. And the book really looks at so many different issues. It looks at dog park politics in San Francisco. It talks about how the dog world really mirrors our own human-to-human interactions. It spends time on some perhaps frivolous things that we do for our pets in terms of buying them fancy outfits and little hats to celebrate things like St. Patrick's Day, et cetera. But in many ways, it's a deep look at why we have this connection. I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm noticing that the nightly news is doing dog stories virtually every other day. I tend to watch NBC, but there was another one last night, and they always get me. The dog that returned home after 4 months, they thought he was Lucy, traveled this great distance. I think it was in Australia. There are a lot of these stories, so obviously dogs serve a purpose in times that are tough economically. We are going to talk about all of this. We have this little thing that I found in Michael's book. So if you go to dogster.com, it will and take this little quiz, which is, you know, not a deep quiz, but it's a little quiz. The results, maybe you could fit any category, parts of your personality, but it would be fun for you to take the quiz. And then when you call in today to let us know, or just to let Wilma Gronder really busy, we'll see how many different kinds of dogs we have listening to this show. And I'll let you know what Rhonda is and what I am a little bit later. Not that you care, but we'll let you know at the end of the hour. We took the quiz, what kinds of dogs we are. So, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. Where's Murphy?
Murphy is currently in his usual position, lying on the floor without a care in the world, just outside the door.
Oh, Murphy. I have a Murphy, too.
Yeah, you know, we adopted him from a shelter, and one of the lesser discussions that day was what we were going to call him. And it was, you know, I had a bunch of names and my wife had a bunch of names, and we did that thing couples are never supposed to do where it was like, this is the name I'm going to choose, and, you know, that's my way or the highway. And she did the same thing. And after about a week, we realized we'd gotten used to his shelter name, which was Murphy.
Yeah.
So
right.
It's sort of been that way ever since.
I love the description. And it's actually not a bad idea when you're getting a dog, except that maybe you want to do your homework first. You've got these books out there, and you're doing all these tests of the dog to make sure that he's not aggressive. You
right.
It's a funny little story, isn't it?
Right. You know, I mean, that day that we were going to get him, I remember this so well. We said to each other, you know, we're never going to do all these crazy things people do for their pets that we had read about. You know, we're not going to be spendthrifts, and, you know, if there's a veterinary problem, we're going to be really reasonable about what we'll pay for and what we won't. And you know, it was all the stuff that seemed so black and white before the dog came home. And, you know, like a lot of people, we suddenly realized we were pet owners, and it's not so black and white. And he, you know, became a member of our family. We love him. And of course, if it were that a medical emergency came up or anything like that, it's not so easy to just say, oh, that's it, we'll never spend that kind of money, it's only a dog, because he's not only a dog. He's now a member of our family, and now we have a daughter who sort of is accustomed to him being here in her family. And I think that's a lot of what I wrote about, is all of these things that from a distance seem like, boy, this country's really gone crazy. I mean, we have Prozac-popping puppies out there that actually, once you're up close and once you're in this world, they actually reflect a lot about how our country has changed, and they don't seem so crazy after all.
Exactly. Have you noticed, as I have, the preponderance, and maybe it's in preparation for President Obama's dog, mm-hmm. which I anticipate may come this weekend. I can't wait. I even send them a letter, of course. I'm so dog crazy. But do you think that there is something about dogs right now that make us comfortable? Why are they all over the news?
You know, people have always loved pets. I think that the way we love our pets has changed, and it always changes in ways that reflect the society. Nowadays, I think, you know, there's so much attention to the Obama dog. It's part of it. But, you know, in this recession, one of the things that has really shocked me is that the overall pet industry, which is a lot of what I write about, this monstrously growing business that was $15 billion in 1994 and is $43 billion a year now. It didn't take a hit in the 2001 recession, and it seems to be resisting this recession pretty well, as far as anyone can tell. And I think it's because in hard times, which these surely are, and in uncertain times, which these surely are, people pull their families close. And for a lot of people, pets have become a member of their family. Mm-hmm. So just the same way as, you know, Netflix is doing pretty well out there right now because of the economy, I think people are pretty eager to return to the first principles. They'll say, I'm not going to maybe go out to dinner so much, or I'm going to demote my own self from shopping at Whole Foods to eating something cheaper for myself, but I'm going to stick with the dog, and I'm going to keep him in the food that I think is necessary for his health.
Right. Tell us now some of the stories that are truly amazing. These are the swimming pool parties that this woman in New York has, and you read about the outfits dogs wear when they come to these parties, and you think, this is an extreme, huh?
You know, I spent 2 years working on this book, and I'm a newspaper reporter. I've covered wars and murders and, you know, really straight, hard news, stuff like that. And I would say to my wife, well, you know, I got to go away for work. And she'd say, where are you going? And I'd say, oh, I'm going to the Chihuahua Social Networking Club, or I'm going to Pet Fashion Week. I did all these crazy things like that were just really incredible. And Pet Fashion Week was probably the most outlandish of them. It's in New York City, of course, every year right before Human Fashion Week. And it features all of these boutique, these people who make pet products to sell in boutiques. And the highlight of it is a fashion show with a runway and with supermodel type, you know, 6-foot models walking dogs down the runway. And the dogs are dressed in these couture doggy fashions. And, you know, they try really, really hard to make it just like a regular fashion show, and the lights go low, and there's this sort of pulsing music. But once the dogs get out there, everyone in the crowd is sort of, oh, that's so cute, which they don't do at a regular human fashion show.
No, of course they don't. But the other poignant part of this story is, even though it sounds kind of outlandish, and why would people waste money on this, the human connection that's made and the friendships that are made, these people develop a whole new group of friends.
Well, you know, one of the questions I had as I went through this is, what changed? I mean, you know, we've always had pets, but it used to be that pets would live in the backyard. I mean, and now, when was the last time you actually saw a doghouse that was used as, like,
exactly.
A doghouse? Now a lot of dogs sleep inside. I actually saw a survey of pictures of dogs that appeared in women's magazines over the 20th century. And, you know, in the 1920s, the standard picture was outdoors. It was a woman, a stylish woman, walking her dog along the street. And by the 50s, the picture would be kind of in the living room, and the dog is curled up in front of the fireplace, and the family scene, the family's on the sofa. And by the 80s and 90s, the dog was actually literally in the bed. And it would be, you know, an aspirin ad or something, and mom is bringing Bayer to her kid who is sick, homesick from school, and the dog is actually in the bed.
Yes.
It sort of shows how they've moved in to the family, and, you know, sort of, it's like Manifest Destiny or something. They're moving right across the continent. You know, I think one of the things that happened, why did this happen now? You know, you can look at the spike in the pet population. It was trucking along at around the same rate as the human population until the late 60s or early 70s, at which point the number of pets starts growing much faster than the number of humans. And one theory is that this is the same time as divorce rates started going up. People started moving out of tight-knit neighborhoods and tight-knit small towns and living in more isolated suburbs. People began to move further away from their families. It was easier to do that. And in the kind of absence of the old social networks, people really leaned on their pets to play a much bigger role in their lives than they used to. And this means that people get much more emotional solace and satisfaction out of their pets. But it also means, as I found while reporting this book, that people are using their pets to sort of come into contact with other humans who they might not meet as a matter of course. And I profiled this incredible woman who organizes the Chihuahua meetups around New York. But, I mean, there are meetups like this all over the country. And she has these parties that are incredibly well attended, and you know, there's a she calls it Chi Giving and Chi Halloween and Chi Christmas, and people dress their little dogs up in costumes and bring pictures and shoot pictures of each other's dogs. And it's the kind of thing where before I went, I was thinking, well, this is really the extreme, and these people really kind of need to get a life. But you know what? As I got into it, I realized these people had actually, you know, it's a tough world out there, and it's hard to meet people. And this is people who had wound up making friends and forming genuine social connections via their dogs. And it might not be the way you or I meet people. Right. It's actually the way I meet people these days. but it was real and true. And, you know, these are, you know, when things would go wrong in these people's lives, they had this new group of people who they'd met. And I thought it was quite sweet.
And there is, I think, some kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but there is a tenderness, a soft heart, I think, among people who really love animals.
Right. And, you know, I'll just say as a reporter, you know, it's sometimes easy to talk to people, but it's often very hard. It's often hard to draw people out and actually talk about themselves. And I found while I was reporting this book, people are just very, very eager to share. People are eager to share about their animals. People love their animals. And it was like this carte blanche to walk right into people's lives, which is, you know, as a writer, what you want to do, because you want to be able to portray reality in all of its complexity, which requires people to open up. You know, the last chapter of my book, I spent visiting with a pet loss bereavement group, which was a terribly sad thing. You know, again, it was one of those things where if you don't think about it that much, you're going to think, boy, this is a bunch of crazy cat ladies, and, you know, they really need to get their priorities straight. But sitting in with them, I mean, these were people who really had bonded with their animals and had felt like they had nowhere to turn when the animal died. You know, when a human dies who you're very close to, people in your office will say, hey, you know, take as much time off as you want, or let's take up a collection, or that sort of thing.
Yes.
These guys didn't feel like that was going on for their pets. This is sort of the very fact that there was this bereavement group that was led by a, you know, professional social worker, a veterinary social worker attached to a vet hospital. That fact shows how far we've come in terms of having this society that really embraces and is obsessed with pets. But the fact that these people felt so alone in their grief also shows the limits that it doesn't go all the way, because a lot of people were saying to them things like, hey, well, you know, you can always get another. Which is true, but it's kind of beside the point.
Yeah, and another is, I've been through that. I know what those people go through. I had a dog who was probably the dog of my life. Maybe not. I have one I love right now. But this dog was extraordinary. And when she died, you know, in some ways, my brother used to say that she took the place of the children I didn't have at that point in my life. And I think that there was some truth in that. She was my big girl and a gorgeous dog. And the two of us were really bonded. When she died, I remember my parents saying, stop crying, stop crying. I couldn't stop crying, Michael.
Couldn't. And that's one woman I talked to in the group said, you know, I feel worse about this than I did when my mother died.
Oh, my.
But I feel like I can't say that to anyone because people will look at me like I'm a monster.
Right.
It was, you know, and again, I had covered murders and stuff. I felt like, gee, I'm a tough reporter. But this, for some reason, really, you know, I felt very affected by these folks, and by what they were going through. And, you know, maybe it's because I have a dog, and I can't imagine, you know, how sad I will feel when he dies. One of the things about the world of pets now is that people have kind of, you know, the big change. The change that explains why we spend so much more than we used to on pet food and on veterinary medicine and on all these things that were sort of an afterthought not so long ago, is that for a lot of people, the pet has kind of been promoted. He's moved in from the backyard. He's not just this goofy creature out there, but he's a full-fledged member of the family. And if you go to an old pet cemetery, and there's some fairly old ones on the East Coast which are, you know, 100 years old or so, and you look at the headstones, the oldest of the headstones will say, you know, here lies Fido, a loyal servant. And by the time you get into the 20th century, it'll say, you know, here lies Fido, man's best friend. And nowadays, you see a lot of, you know, mommy misses you, daddy's little girl, that sort of stuff. So really, people have almost promoted them to children. And, of course, nobody literally thinks that their pet is a human child. And the one big difference is that when you have children, you do not expect that you will outlive your children. You expect your children will outlive you. With pets, that's not the case. People know that that they're going to have 10 or 15 years, but that's it.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls. Michael Schaefer is our guest. His book, and a really interesting one it is, One Nation Underdog, Adventures in the New World of Prozac Popping Puppies, Dog Park Politics. We need to go into dog park politics because there's a chapter that's very interesting about what's going on in California, San Francisco area. I think that it's titled, I Have a Dog and I Vote. So there have been a lot of interesting political things going on in that part of the world concerning dogs and environmentalists. We'll talk about that. And we'll welcome your phone calls. I know that many of you have gone already to dogster.com to see what kind of dog you are. And we'll talk to some of you as well. If you'd like to do that, that would be a fun way to introduce yourself. And then we'll talk about your question. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. One Nation Underdog, Michael Schaefer is our guest, and let's start calls with Judy from Reedstown. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I'm sorry to start off on a sort of sour, sad note, but throughout this program, I'd like you to remember that while some of these dogs are getting pampered and good care and little devotion, there are dogs after dogs after dogs that are being thrown out alongside the road. Six or seven puppies. I'm looking at a spot right now down at the end of my field where these people just abandoned them.
Right.
Die of starvation or be eaten or something like that. So I hope that you will be reminding everybody who loves these dogs and indulges them that there's some mutt out there that really does need a home, and maybe he'll get a good one.
Right, right. And you cover that, abuse of dogs, puppy mills, in your book, Michael.
No, I mean, One of the great contrasts. I mean, there the world of humans and animals is obviously a place where there's all kinds of contradictions. Is this this contrast between what happens to unwanted animals and what happens to the animals who are lucky enough to find themselves turned into a pet? That is an animal who's kept around a family just for its own sweet sake. Right up the street from me at the University of Pennsylvania Veterinary Hospital. It's one of the most advanced veterinary hospitals in the country. And a lot of the advances are on the small animal, the pet side. They do feline kidney transplants.
Goodness.
An incredibly expensive operation where people spend, $12,000 to transplant a kidney into their ailing cat. And at the same time, in the same city, thousands and thousands of strays are killed every year. It's just one of these things which it's like jaw-dropping as you think about the contradiction between the amount someone's willing to spend to preserve one cat and the number of cats who are just, and dogs too, who are just abandoned. I think one of the things that has changed in some places, and it's not universal by any means, is that the spay-neuter campaign that used to be that sort of goofy thing Bob Barker said on the press?
Yes, right.
Has been so successful that in some cities, in some cities on the mostly on the coasts in the Northeast, there's actually not that many strays around, and you have these shipments, these kind of underground railroad shipments from the heartland and from the South to these places of unwanted pets that people could adopt. This is not to say that there's been a tremendous success and that we have no unwanted pets, and that even the production of pets, the pet industry, the puppy mills and churning out pets for pet stores itself creates tremendous cases of cruelty and callous disregard. It's just to say there are actually some silver linings up there.
Thank you, Judy, very much for the call. Let's go to Arlene next from New Berlin. Hi, Arlene.
Good morning.
Hi.
I took the test, and I am a German Shepherd.
What does that mean, Arlene?
The some idea human companions. It says A-type personality, and definitely I'm an A-type personality. But I wanted to tell you that I've had several big dogs over the years.
Mm-hmm.
The first were boxers. And when the first female boxer that we had died, which was a very unusual death, I couldn't even explain it to you. My last child was in grade school, and she died after the kids went to school. And when they came home for lunch, when years ago kids could come home for lunch for school, I had to tell them that she died. Well, let me tell you, when they went back to school, these kids were crying.
Right.
And the teacher and the principal thought that their grandmother or maybe their father died, and they finally, they called me and they said, "What happened?" And I said, "Their favorite dog died." And it was so heartbreaking for them. But I've had dogs, big dogs, all my life. And now, of course, I have a small poodle because I have a small house.
Mm-hmm. So what does it mean for you to be a German Shepherd? You're smart, you're...
Handsome. Well, it says trademarks, handsome, well-built, intelligent, eager, loyal, hardworking, strong-willed. And the ideal human companion is energetic people, active families, disciplinarians, and A-type personalities.
Thanks, Arlene, very much for your call. We're doing this just for our own amusement, too, so we can think of our audience in terms of dogs. You know, I mean, I think of people, one person listening, but it'd be fun to think of people in terms of listening with your dogs. You can send an email, too, if you'd like, after you take the dogster.com test and send it to Rhonda, and just send it to talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. Sarah is calling from Madison. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Boy, the book sounds fantastic, and I can't wait to go out and get it.
Great.
So far, sounds wonderful. I am a certified dog behavior consultant and certified pet dog trainer in Madison. I own Blue Dog, and I speak all over the world on dog behavior and dog training, and we have been wondering when the economy was going to hit us, because in this field of training and behavior, it seemed like, you know, we'd all talk to each other and say, you know, I'm not noticing
right.
anything. Are you noticing anything? And just recently, in the past 2 to 3 months, I've been talking to people and noticing in my own business that we're getting lots of people saying, how much is it? Oh, mm-hmm. I don't know if I can do that. Or, you know, just in the last couple of days, I've gotten a number of cancellations, people saying, you know, the economy just can't afford it right now. So it seems like the economy finally is affecting this industry in a way that it hasn't before, which is disturbing because, you know, when you get a call from someone whose dog has bitten their child, and they decide, yeah, we're just going to try and work with it ourselves or watch something that's on television and take that advice, which is not the best idea,
right.
Instead of, you know, hiring a professional to work with it, that's troublesome. And not only that, we're seeing a lot more surrenders recently to rescues and shelters with people who don't have the money to put in. So one of the things that we're focusing on a lot now is helping people select the right dog, and I think Michael said, do your homework first.
Right.
And that's incredibly important, and it's something that not a lot of people think of. A dog can be a very, they're very emotional part of our lives, but they also can become a very emotional addition. You know, people decide they want to get a dog, and then 48 hours later, they've got one. So one of the things we're focusing on is helping people make the right selection the first time to save them money down the road on, you know, needing a behaviorist or needing a lot of extra training because their dog has issues. So
right.
The economy has unfortunately hit, or the economic conditions, and I'm hoping that it rebounds soon.
Michael.
Right, I hope so, too. I mean, you know, in a lot of parts of the country, over the last 10 years, hiring a trainer to work with your dog, it's become kind of an unremarkable, normal, responsible thing people do, like sending your teenage kid to driver's ed or something like that. And for the same reason, that you, as a family, don't want to have your dog cause, you know, harm to others or to itself or to create a bad situation in the house. People have begun doing that. It, not so long ago, it was something that you'd only do if you had sort of a particular problem dog or wanted some kind of specialized training, and it's become a very common thing. You know, one of the real issues, though, as the number of trainers, according to the federal government statistics, they actually keep stats on this stuff now, the number of trainers tripled between 2000 and 2006, but there isn't really any control over what they teach. I mean, anybody could claim to be a dog trainer, and most people among consumers are not aware of what the distinctions within the philosophies and within the different associations mean. So there is, you alluded to TV dog trainers like Cesar Millan, who advocates this kind of pack theory idea that's very top down. It's the idea is that the dogs, the reason dogs are not behaved is that they don't know who's boss. And we need to remind them who's boss and sort of get back to the order it would have been for them in the pack, where there's an alpha who's gonna really set the tone and set the pace. And a lot of professional trainers who have been working far longer and have a lot of education around this actually think the better idea is to engage in a mostly positive type of dog training, where instead of hitting the dog when he does something wrong and dog might not be able to figure out why he got hit, it's to sort of emphasize treats and good things happening when the dog does the right thing. To my mind, and you know, one of the things I was getting at in my book is how dogs explain America, how you can learn all sorts of things about our society, about things that you wouldn't think of having to do with pets by looking at how we treat our pets. This kind of battle between the two different schools, it's a little bit like the culture wars in politics, with one side saying, you know, we need to get back to discipline and authority, and another side saying, hey, you know what, we've actually researched this, and the real problem is that we need to teach smarter and be smarter about culture.
Right. Interesting.
You know, that sounds awfully familiar.
Right.
And yet there it is in the world of dogs. I think, I think working with trainers is such a good thing, it's such a helpful thing, because nowadays it's, despite the economy, it is harder than ever to give up your pet. I mean, for some people obviously do it. They have no choice. It's a terribly sad thing. But a lot of families are, you know, it's sort of an unthinkable idea. And so having a dog with behavior problems, and it really does create a kind of emotional problem in the family. It's a crisis every day, and it's in most cases a crisis that's solvable.
Right. Thanks, Sarah, very much for your call. Let's go to Andrew from Bayside. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Andrew, and I'm apparently a Labrador Retriever.
Are you?
Well, that's what Dogster says.
All right, we got to keep track of these to find out what our audience is. We have a Labrador Retriever. Great. And we had a German Shepherd. Okay.
Well, yeah, I was calling because I have to say I really, I really felt strongly about what Michael said. So much so that, you know, I'm a big dog lover and had my whole life, but I also felt that here in Wisconsin there haven't been enough places where dog people can go and kind of be with their dogs.
Right.
So, I'm actually right in the process of starting a business which is called Community Bark, and it's a dog wash and coffee bar.
Oh.
So basically people can go and, you know, of course they can wash their own dogs or get them groomed, but they can actually hang out with their dogs and enjoy some coffee, you know, and relax.
Oh, I love this.
And build community with other dog people.
All right. When is it opening?
It's going to be, I'm actually in Shorewood, but it's going to be in Bayside, and we're going to be opening early this summer.
Wonderful.
You know, I think that's such a great idea. While I was doing my research for this book, I was in Austin, Texas, visiting with a company that manufactures chew toys for dogs, and I was walking back to my hotel at night, and I passed this bar, and there was a sign outside. It said, Yappy Hour tonight. And this is, you know, was one of the slow nights of the week. And what they had done was open up the space to people with pets. They put out some water bowls and so on. And it was a great idea. They had huge amounts of customers because people, I mean, first of all, if you got to walk your dog twice a day, sometimes it'd be nice to sort of combine that with doing something more social with humans. But also it really shows the centrality of pets in a lot of people's lives, that they would really like to get them together with their social life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a whole chapter where I write about dog parks, and it's this sort of goofy idea that you ought to be able to let your dogs off leash in the park. They need exercise, they need to romp, and so on. And I did this chapter in San Francisco, which is a place where the amount of open space is very limited and therefore very much fought over. And, you know, on one level, there would be these fights that would be just like, you know, you saying you want a soccer field in the park and me saying I want an amphitheater and we can't have both. And they have to be sorted out in politics. But the fact that the people who wanted dog freedom in these parks were so passionate about it and were actually able to, you know, were actually willing to push back against politicians who said, well, we want to have it for children's soccer or whatever. Really shows how committed they are to their pets and the centrality of pets in people's lives. I think that's mostly a good thing. There are a lot of people who say, boy, we've really got our priorities out of whack.
What were the buttons that were popping up? I have a dog and I vote.
People had bumper stickers on their car. I have a dog and I vote. They started a group called Dog Pack, which is the dog owners' political action committee, and endorsed candidates. And the political candidates would come hat in hand to this group, saying, I promise I'll help you on this, and this issue. Some people, the guy who's the mayor now, some people credit his sort of catering to this group with helping his political rise.
Thanks very much, Andrew, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Michael Schaefer is our guest. His book is One Nation Underdog, and we are welcoming your phone calls. We also ask you to go to dogster.com and take the What Kind of Dog Am I quiz, because it's interesting to see where our audience is. We won't be able to get to all the answers on the air. So if you want to email us the response, we can tell you what kind of listeners we have. Are we German Shepherds predominantly? Are we fairly mixed? Are we Labradors? Are we what are we? Pugs, etc. All right. 800-486-8655 is our number, and let's go next to Paul from Duluth. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a terrific show. I want to tell you about a little dog park civil disobedience that I was involved in Denver about 10 years ago now. I had just moved to a new neighborhood, but we had a really big park. And I was walking my wonderful dog, Cassie, twice a day. And one evening, I was, walking her out to the park, and I saw this big group of people, maybe 20 or 30, smack out in the middle of this huge field. And there were a lot of dogs around. So I walked over there, and sure enough, they all had their dogs off leash. And they were all chit-chatting, and, somebody even brought a bottle of wine, Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, good. So I let my dog off leash. And I got to talking to people, and somebody told me that they were just waiting for the police to come and ticket everybody for having a dog off leash. And they said that their idea was to, get a dog park, and that is a huge park. And so I thought, okay, I'm game. Well, sure enough, right after dusk, the police invaded us from three sides and ticketed everybody. And we took our tickets. We didn't argue.
Mm-hmm.
And we put our dogs back on the leashes. And immediately after they left, we as a group decided that we were all going to fight the tickets.
Right.
And sure enough, within about 3 months, we had a dog park. I mean, the city was just not willing to put up with the hassle.
Right.
And by the way, I'm a Chow.
You're a Chow. Okay,
yeah,
that's something new.
My wonderful 15-year-old Chow. I don't know if she has come around to my way of thinking or if I've come around to hers, but we are so perfectly matched.
So you are your dog. That's interesting. All right.
Or she's me.
She's your dog is you, right.
I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
It's just she has gone from being, she was about 8 months old when I got her from the shelter, and she was hell on wheels then. And I know when I was a teenager, I was hell on wheels. And and now, all these years later, we are both reservedly friendly to outsiders. We're friendly, but we were stoic about it, and we're both the same.
Michael,
One of the themes that I hit again and again as I did research on this book is pets, especially dogs, but all pets, have become more central to people's lives than they had been before. And watching the creaky old wheels of government and justice and so on try to adjust to this has been a recurring theme. Not so long ago in Denver, where you were, government might not have really thought about, gee,
you know, we need a dog park. This is public land. The government administers it, and dog owners were sort of low on the list of people in their priorities. And that's really changed. You know, I mean, people are willing to be vocal about the fact that they love their pets and that they want a space for them. You know, think about it kind of like hunters. You know, if the government were to try to, you know, outlaw hunting in such and such place or whatever, people would really be up in arms because it's leaving aside the constitutional issues, it's really central to a lot of people's lifestyle. Same way with dogs. Dogs are pretty central to your lifestyle and you're willing to fight for it.
Thank you so much for the call. Here's an email. Good morning, Michael. I'm a hobby farmer from Superior, Wisconsin. I took the test and turned out to be a bulldog. I've never had a bulldog, but now I'm thinking about it. My last two dogs have been an Irish setter, Barney, who died on Father's Day last year of old age, and now I have a one-year-old bloodhound, Grizzly, who's 100% puppy. After this, maybe a bulldog. Tough guy exterior with a soft, loyal interior. Great sense of humor and love beer and NASCAR. That really is me. Have you taken this quiz? Do you know what you are?
I don't know.
You're kidding. You don't know?
No, I should.
Oh, Michael, you should.
I wish I'd known. I would do it. I bet you I'm a... Well, I'd like to think I'm a St. Bernard like my dog.
Well, I found out about it through your book because you
talked
about.
He's never been a rocket scientist.
Well, take the quiz if you have time and let us know what you are so
I'll
we can
that.
Announce that tomorrow if we need to. We'll do it tomorrow if you don't have time today because you're on the radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and Michael Schaefer is our guest, author of One Nation Under Dog. Michael Schaefer, our guest. His book is One Nation Under Dog, Adventures in the New World of Prozac Popping Puppies, Dog Park Politics, and Organic Pet Food. Jackie is next from Galena. Hi, Jackie.
Good morning. What a great fun show. I'm calling for a couple things. First of all, I don't know if anyone ever else has an experience. Walk down the road or a street and you see someone with a dog and you say, oh, what a beautiful dog. Can I pet it? And you ask for its name. And then the owner says to me, well, it'd be nice to ask me what my name is, too. That was just a little one that I wanted to lift up. And I also want to lift up Kathleen, that in Milwaukee, there is a woman who has put together a fairly large-sized grant to help people who don't want to give up their animals to the rescue or to the Humane Society. And it's being worked through the 16th Street Health Center. And people can get shots and things for their animals at a reduced cost and sometimes even for free, neutered and spayed. But I'll email you that offline.
Okay, Jackie,
anybody
great.
Else would like to know. And she worked really diligently, realizing, as I do, that there are many people who don't want to, as we know, give up their animal companions, but they can't afford it. So here, instead of giving up to them, they help you with the food, shots, and things ahead of time to get you over the hard time. So that's kind of cool. I just wanted to link that
great.
For
let,
you.
Let us know more about that. Thank you so much. And that's another thing. I know that John Katz, who's one of our favorite guests, I love it. I love the way he writes about his farm, gave you an endorsement for your book and loved your book. But he talks about dogs. You know, the latest book is about hospice and how dogs can really fulfill this important role in easing us through death.
Right, and you know, dogs are they sort of represent the full life cycle, and I think a lot of parents, you know, they don't maybe think about this calculatingly, but they sort of realize that like growing up with a dog is going to teach children, you know, about life and also about death, and similarly, you have these people who've really managed to break through to populations by being with their dogs. You have, you know, dogs in schools, dogs in nursing homes, and so on, it bringing cheer and bringing a sense of kind of controlled chaos that I think is part of the vibrancy of life.
Right. Let's go next to Rebecca from Platteville. Hi, Rebecca.
Hi. Well, during these hard financial times when a lot of people are having difficulties and people are losing homes and stuff, and the animals are so important. What really concerns me, and I think it's kind of a scam going on, is the fact that the price of dog food, pet food, has doubled within, like, the last year. And I am a multiple-animal household, and I do know this. And the justified it at first for the price of gas because of two heavyweight items having to transport them, and the price of corn, which unfortunately most food for animals, that's the top ingredient. Well, since then, the price of gas has gone down, as we all know. The price of corn is in half, and yet the price of the pet food has stayed doubled. Shelters are having food drives because they're pinched. People are losing jobs, but they love their animals, and they're pinched. And I don't understand the justification for this. It really bothers me.
Michael, what is it?
You know, I think the way the pet food business has changed, it really parallels a lot of how the human food business has changed. A generation ago, pretty much everyone shopped at, you know, supermarkets like Safeway. And nowadays, humans, some of us shop at Whole Foods, some of us go to Walmart, some of us go to the farmer's market. There's this great diversity, including of prices, but also of tastes and so on. And you see the exact same thing in the world of pets. There remain no-name generic brands, bulk brands, but at the very top of the market, you have seen all of these sort of organic and holistic, and I profiled a group of people who advocate feeding raw food to dogs. It's very expensive, but the idea is that, you know, in the wild, a bunch of wolves didn't come across breakfast that looked like it had just come out of a breakfast cereal factory. They would have had to hunt their prey and get, you know, raw flesh and maybe a little bone and whatever undigested stuff was in the stomach. I mean, it's not pretty, but that's sort of the way it was. And you see, you have all of the activity in the market is sort of at the very high expensive end. And one of the things that's demonstrated to these companies is that people are willing to pay more, particularly if you can promise them something, either accurately or not, promise them something in terms of that you're going to get more healthy ingredients for your animals. And I suspect they're just doing what they think the market can bear because people will pay it. And, you know, they're businesses. That's what they do. Because God knows it, you know, for the bulk brands, they don't need to be that expensive.
Right. Well, and also because of the tainted dog food from China that everybody worried too, right?
Well, and that scandal was a really telling thing for a lot of people because it didn't just involve the cheapest brands on the market. It involved a lot of brands with good reputations that people willingly pay more money for because they feel like they owe it to their pets to do the right thing health-wise. And you know what? They had ingredients that came from the same factory that poisoned so many animals.
Yes. Let's welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655 to tell you about our audience so far. We have two labs, one German Shepherd, two Bulldogs, one Chow, one Golden Retriever, and one – no, we have three labs now. Whew, that's interesting. And one Jack Russell Terrier. This is great. I'm going to think of you in those terms forever. 800-486-8655. Sherry is next from I-94 somewhere. Hi, Sherry.
Hey, how are you? Well, I'm just so sincerely enjoying the show, and I've had dogs all my life. I got a couple of stories to relate. I have a corgi right now, and I've had Shelties, but with my mother, who lived till she was 93 and was in a home for the aged, and I used to go regularly, and the whole home used to look forward to me bringing my two Shelties mm-hmm. that were brothers, and literally looked upon it as an event, and I didn't think that was much of it, but they had me coming on a regular weekly visit with my dogs, and everybody would show up at an assembly there, and my dogs would kind of perform a little bit. They could sing and stuff. And,
oh, they could
but,
sing.
But the real thing is that, and I found it real therapy. Of course, I find it therapy for myself, and I'm not that particular about what I feed them. I feed them a lot of scraps. I mean, it wasn't too long ago they never had dog food, and my dogs have lived till 19 and 17 and 15, and I think it's the old story. If you want love, show love, and that's what dogs are all about. And I think a story I want to relate for your listening audience was in the 30s. My father lived in the prairies, and he had a little store and a room in the back. And in the middle of the night, it caught on fire. He woke up, and the room was completely full of smoke. and he got down on his hands and knees to see where the door is, and his dog put his mouth around his wrist and let him out the door. I'm really looking forward to reading this book. And so ever since dogs, I mean, when I was a kid, I would leave for school. The dog would be with me, and he'd wait out in front for a few minutes. We only lived a few blocks away. And my mother said at 11:45 when I was coming home for lunch, he'd be yelping, and he'd be there waiting for me.
Oh, don't you just love that? Oh.
And so I've had a relationship. And my dog, Newman, now that's the corgi, he was guest of the week at the Hilton Hotel a month or so ago. So they had his name up and everything. And he travels everywhere with us. We're traveling right now to see our daughter in Minneapolis for the holidays. And so, I mean, it's very specific to me. It's the old story. If you want respect, show respect. If you want love, show love.
I like that. Thank you so much for the call. What will it mean? I keep waiting for this to happen, and I think it might be this weekend because, as we said, dogs are good news for us. I think that the Portuguese water dog might be unveiled very soon. Somebody told me, I'm thinking about raising dogs when I retire from radio, and somebody said, well, maybe you should raise those kinds of dogs because they're going to become quite popular. But can't you just see the rollout for this? The interest in the first dog is enormous, Michael.
I think so. I mean, and you know, can you imagine these days having a president without a dog? I mean, it's now become sort of part of the standard family picture for presidents. And I think nowadays, because of all the changes in pet care that I document in my book, you're going to have attention to all kinds of really small details. It'll be, you know, well, what kind of food does the Obama's dog get?
I know.
If they hire a trainer, what sort of training does the trainer advocate? Is it a kind of positive training, or is it the discipline top down variety of training? Who takes care of the dog all day? And I'm sure there are plans to make sure that no one in the press ever takes a picture of a White House employee who is paid for by our tax dollars cleaning up poop from the dog.
Right.
And I'm sure, you know, from what I've heard about the Obamas, they're pretty keen on having their daughters grow up in as normal an environment as possible. So I'm sure they're also going to be making sure their girls do those chores for them.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there are actually all of these postmodern issues in pet ownership that are going to be played out on this enormous national stage. What the selection will do for that kind of dog, the Portuguese water dog, I'm not quite sure. I mean, I've seen some stuff. We've all heard about the 101 Dalmatians effect. When that movie came out, there was a run on Dalmatians. Everyone wanted a Dalmatian. And it turned out Dalmatians are fairly difficult dogs to own.
That's what I've heard.
And a lot of people, you know, anecdotally at least, a lot of people then gave them back and so on. I've also seen data, though, that shows other dogs that have had media exposure or starred in a movie or what have you, don't actually spike in popularity. And there's a lot of questions about what exactly makes one breed popular at one time and another breed popular at another time. I think the nicest thing, if it had been possible, would have been if they could have gotten a rescue dog or gotten a dog from a shelter, a mutt. As the president has said himself, you know, he's a mutt.
He's a mutt.
And, you know, we live in this time in history when we kind of celebrate the diverse roots of our society. And if you go to a nice restaurant, it's not enough now to have it just be a French restaurant. It's now, well, the cook is from France, but he lived in Thailand for a bunch of years. And
he does this
kind of Argentine cooking.
Right.
And the same with supermodels. You know, well, she's half Russian and half Japanese and half Bolivian and half, all, you know, more halves than you could have ever imagined. And yet, when you look at one of these dog shows on TV, it's still this very old-fashioned, well, you know, this beagle's roots go all the way back to such and such beagle from however many generations ago.
Right.
When we don't judge each other as humans that way anymore, and we once did, and we now don't. And it's funny that we still have a little bit of that in the way we look at pets. I'm glad we have less of it than we used to.
Yeah,
you know, even
Michael.
I went to Pet Fashion Week, as frou-frou as that may be, the models were very tall, glamorous models, the human models. But the dogs they walked down the aisle were mixed breeds from the from shelters.
Which great. That's we're all mutts, aren't we? Michael, thank you so much for being with us. Michael Schaefer, his book is One Nation Under Dog. I invited Rhonda Fanning to come in because I asked her to take the quiz as well. I heard from an old high school friend. I put this on Facebook, and he wrote back, I should have figured that most native Chicagoans probably are Labrador retrievers thinking about our next meal and chasing sticks into the pond. I am a Labrador retriever. I'm happy to say I haven't had one in years, but I like Labrador retrievers. Rhonda is a bulldog. Because?
Well, I don't remember. You have actually the sheet that describes who we are. We're kind of, I guess, not as tough as we look. Tough mug, worse than its bite, really a softy, loyal to their friends and family. There was one other pit bull that I think emailed in that we have in our audience, but I was surprised to see that the majority of our audiences are Jack Russell Terriers.
I know.
So if someone could forward me the description of that so
please,
I can kind of get
please.
An idea of who is all out there listening.
And we'll give you full results of our poll tomorrow. We won't have time, but we had, Jack Russell Terriers and Labs were number one and two.
And the emails are still coming in.
Oh, good. All right. We'll do a whole complete. Go to dogster.com. Email Rhonda at fanning@wpr.org. And we'll tell you all the results tomorrow. Thank you, Rhonda.
Thank you.
Thanks, Carmen Jackson, as well. It was a great hour.